Sup guys, I'm Taboo.
And I'm Church.
And we are the Dark Souls 2.
And welcome to the Dark Souls 2. With this episode, we're talking about the Forest of the Fallen Giants.
Yeah. Now, we've got a few comments from our last episode, however. We have gone over, obviously, and replayed the intro a few times now. And one thing that we've noticed that we sort of glossed over last episode is how in the opening cinematic, it has scenes of you in a house with a woman and a child. And I think it's implied strongly that it's your wife and your kid.
Absolutely. I mean, I often wondered if they were kind of stylistic placeholders for a conventional view of what a family is. But I think an argument could definitely be made that that's specifically your wife and your child.
Yeah, in hindsight, I think it leaves strong credence to the fact that you have actually left a real world, which we touched on last episode, but I don't think we expanded this much on. Like, you've very clearly come from a real world where you had a life and a family and a kid. And you've been so overruled by this curse that you've forgotten all of that stuff, which I think is symbolically made clear through your wife's face melting. It sort of symbolizes your memory fading of this.
I just want to point out that you can replace the word curse with the word game, and it still remains true. You had this wife and this kid, but you've been so consumed by this game that you've forgotten what they look like.
God, ain't that the truth? I certainly don't have a wife, though, or a kid for that matter.
That you know of.
Well.
Also, our listener Brian pointed out an error that I think we made with the way that the intro cinematic and the beginning of the game plays around the effigy that you're given. So we said, Okay, yeah, damn, I fucked it up. You get given the effigy, you interact with it a little bit, and then suddenly you don't have it in your inventory anymore. But Brian pointed out that that's the point you become human. So actually, you do use it. It turns you into a human.
Yeah, you actually spawn in the game as a Hollow. And from the end of that cinematic where you've made your character and you've stopped talking to them and they've shown you that effigy, you're now human. You have full health.
That, I think, actually answers a question that I never would have thought to ask in any other game. Why does a human effigy restore my humanity? By looking at the effigy and being reminded of who you are, you become more human. And that's its function. That's why it's a human effigy and not some other item that has that function within the game. Looking at it and being reminded of who you are reverses the insanity a little bit and makes you more human.
Now, on top of that, we also had another comment from a listener, Kevin, who alerted us to the fact that, last episode we had a little tip that stated, make sure you don't attack NPCs because they will go hostile and they won't come back. I think that says more about us as players and the fact that we haven't attacked any of our NPCs, because if we had, we would have realized in this game, actually, when you kill an NPC, it leaves a tombstone. And at the tombstone, you can summon that NPC's spirit or ghost with souls. And so they still function the same way they would have if they were real, but for killing them, you get punished by having to spend souls every time to summon their spirit. For an example, with the Emerald Herald, if you knock her off, yeah, she's still going to be in the game. She's still going to be able to level you up with your souls, but you have to invest souls each time to bring her up. So no longer is it like 10,000 souls to get from level 90 to 91. It's 10,000 souls plus that extra little fee just to get her in the game again.
Interesting.
Now, while we're on the topic of our listeners giving us feedback, I suppose now would be a good time to just make quick note that we really live and breathe off feedback and things like iTunes reviews and that kind of stuff. If you're enjoying this podcast, it would be a great boon to us to get some of those reviews rolling in for iTunes and get a wider audience. It's taking off now for us, which is excellent, but we can never have too many listeners. We'll even make it easy for you and leave a link to our iTunes page in the show notes. Now, we have some announcements.
There's a patch coming out.
Oh, yeah. 1.3. It's
1.03.
Excuse me. It's been announced, but at the moment there's no immediate release date. We've been told it's coming soon, but they have told us the things that it's fixing. And I think they've come out and sort of said, look, we want the fans to know that we are aware of the problems and we are going to fix them. We don't have an immediate release date yet, but it's coming and it's coming soon. Just hang in there. We are going to fix this stuff because it does cover some important stuff. Like, for an example, a lot of people were plagued by an issue with the last update, 1.02, where once it got applied, if they were in Dranglate Castle, they couldn't get out. It locked the doors on them in the castle.
Can you use a homeward bone? Surely.
I'm not sure. Maybe the last bonfire is in the castle itself.
But then you just use the bonfire to travel.
Possibly.
Those people were so dumb, they deserve to get locked in there. Imagine if I accidentally summoned one of them to help me.
Okay, so what if you summon out and then you try and get back in because that's where you have to go to continue the game?
Well, you've got someone gone from the bonfire, you just go back in through the bonfire. Who cares if the door's locked?
Right, you can get in, but what if it leads to the next area in the game? You can't progress.
Oh, I suppose, yeah, right, fine.
There you go.
I'll summon you to help me. Now, a really good change, I think, an excellent change, is that succeeding when summoned to aid another player will make you a human, as if you'd consumed an effigy.
Yeah, how good is that? Awesome. A reward on that level for helping other players in the game, it gives you more reason to partake in the co-op of the game.
Because if you think about it, in practical terms, you can only become a human so many times because there's only so many human effigies within the game.
Yep.
So it's kind of like it gives you a way to always have an option to go human.
Now, there was also a bug that they fixed where apparently if you tried to create a multiplayer session and it failed, you could no longer use online play items like the white soapstone, that kind of stuff. So they fixed that up. If anybody had been bothered by that, I personally hadn't experienced
it. Yeah, I haven't seen
that one. It's something that needs to be fixed, obviously.
They're adding dialogue for the sex change coffin.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that one. It was such like a beginner trap, right? Noob trap.
Yeah, I mean...
And it's cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like some organ harvesting scheme, isn't it? You just kind of rock up and don't even notice your penis is gone.
Well, I mean, I think if I wake up in a bathtub full of ice, I'd probably notice my kidney was gone. But I suppose in this case...
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. It's a perfect scam, isn't it? You've tricked someone to lay down on a sarcophagus, which I did voluntarily. No one even asked me to, right?
With me, it took me a good 90 minutes in-game, and I just assumed it was a bug.
Mm.
So good that they've done it for those people that were going to delete their character 2 hours in because they thought they were plagued by a bug. Bad because it was such a cool little noob trap. And now there's also coming a bug fix for a bug which I had been hit by and you had been hit by as well, where all the items in an area respawned.
What a horrible shame.
Yeah, in our case, it was glorious though, right? Because it was Majula.
Yeah, and so I felt kind of cheap, you know, but there were these extra items that just suddenly appeared.
Yeah, two Esther shards in Majula, so suddenly you get two more.
So they fixed up some other things, like there were some issues with New Game Plus and items not being available in stores, which apparently has been fixed.
And you no longer also fall through the elevators when using the binoculars to manually aim a spell. Not sure how somebody figured that one out the first time, but odd.
We have some new tips. Like, for instance, don't break wooden chests because the only thing that comes out of it is an item called rubbish.
Yeah. I mean, how bad is that? Everyone's on edge thinking that any chest might have a mimic or some poison in it or something, so you go around whacking them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you hit them too hard or too many times, they break. And when they break, I didn't realize I picked up rubbish, and I thought, oh, that chest had rubbish. Turns out, no, anytime you break a chest, all you're going to get out of it is rubbish. Now, one that actually drove me nuts when I found out, because I'm probably about 3/4 through the game now, is that illusory walls don't function the same way they did in Dark Souls 1.
How frustrating. So let me tell you a story, right? The first illusionary wall that I'd found, and I'm like, it's clearly I can go through here. It's not fooling anybody. Shoot a spell, whack it with my sword, do the strong attack, roll into it, nothing's happening. It takes me literally like 3 or 4 minutes of straight going nuts, and then I press A without it, you know, it doesn't tell me I need to press A, and the door just opens. And I thought, that's a bloody farce. Shortly later, I'm in the same area, summoned into someone else's world to help them, and I'm thinking, oh, he's up this freaking wall, the first one in the game, and he probably has no idea how to open it, and I got no way to communicate to him that you just got to press A, right? Hit his marches up, hits it a couple times. Within 15 seconds, he's worked out how to open it.
Goddamn.
Bastard.
Took me 3/4 of the game. Rage-inducing when I figured that out. So, on that note, the tip is, to interact with the illusory walls, no longer roll through them or hit them. You have to press A or X to interact with them. Okay, next tip. Bashing and guard breaking. To guard break someone, you have to deplete all of their stamina. Now, for PvP, that's incredibly important because if you're PvPing and you're getting overwhelmed by this guy, so you're just holding your shield up, great. I'm just going to sit there spamming at your shield until your stamina disappears, and that's going to guard break you, which basically puts you into this staggered stance. And while you're in a staggered stance, I can come up and do an R1, and that's going to do devastating damage to you. I've found, in my game at least, it does a lot more damage than just a normal backstab or a riposte.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it seems to be one of the most powerful attacks you can do to an enemy. So in PvP, I can see that being absolutely devastating if you're not aware of it. Now, the bashing, on the other hand, when you tap forward an R1, it does a bash. Now, the way that works is if you're holding your shield up, this immediately puts them into that guard break stance. So basically, the long and short is you either work their stamina all the way down or you bash them once, and both things will put them into this guard break stance where you can then do this ridiculously powerful attack. Really cool.
Nice. So last time we talked about that monument that Solden sits on And we said that you can't tell how many times you've died, only how many times the community has died. And we thought it was a little bit lame. Turns out we were wrong. And the answer is actually really simple. If you go offline, it only tells you how many times you've died because that's the only deaths that it knows about.
Yeah, I wouldn't say we're wrong, just more that it's a loophole, I would say, in the system. Sure. Which is cool, because that's information I'm far more interested in than seeing this ridiculously large number.
I checked a little while ago. I died 178 times, and I've died a few times since
then. How far through the game are you?
On this character, I am not super far, actually. Yeah, because it's hard to say I'm in this area when, you know, people take different paths, don't they?
Yeah,
how many times have you died?
We might talk about that later, eh?
It's a lot?
It might come off in a later episode. All right. That's it for the tips. Let's go on to the actual content of this episode. The Forest of the Fallen Giants. We harmonise then, Church.
Well, I wouldn't say we harmonise. You're a bit off key.
So, G, Scott. G.
I thought you were just talking about my underwear. So, last episode we mentioned Solden, and he's actually the first hint you get that the Forest of the Fallen Giants is there.
Do you see the way beyond the bonfire? That will take you to the Forest of the Giants. There was once a great fort. Little of it remains. You may just find something there that will be of use on your journey. But don't venture too far inside, or you might not come back.
He tells you to go beyond the bonfire and find the Forest of the Fallen Giants, where there was once a great fort, but now only ruins remain.
And from the bonfire, if you look off into the distance, you can actually see the fort from where you are, which is a nice little touch. You know, it's really they've always cool. done that well.
And there's a few things that are off on mountains nearby and in the distance. And you
always wonder, am I going to go there?
Because I don't know yet, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah. So in this case, yep, sure enough, you can see the fort. But before you get to the fort, you have to go through the forest. And that's where we're going to head now.
So following that path by the coast brings you to a large wooden gate with a...
It's this sort of lever on the wall, right? And it's hidden in plain view. And it's the first time you sort of know that even with the environment, you're in Dark Souls. Because it's there, and it's so clear it's there. And when you find it, it's like, how could I have ever missed that? But it's so easy to walk down there, have a look around, see a chest, see a door, go, clearly can't go through that now. Better go look somewhere else.
Is that what you did?
Oh, absolutely.
I didn't do that.
Okay.
I found the lever straight away.
Sure
enough. Just look to the right. There it is. You stand at the door. Is there anything around here? Yes, there is.
Well, you had much more success than I did.
Yeah, well, apparently that's why I've only died 178 times.
We'll talk about it later. So, sure enough, pull the lever on the wall, gate goes up. They mention the Firekeepers. They mention that the area that you spawn in is separate from the rest of the world. It's kind of limbo. And I've noticed that going straight from Things Betwixt into Majula is this nice... straight line, nothing blocking the way, but all the areas leading out of Majula seem to have some sort of a barrier of some sorts, wooden gate or...
like a gate or a door or something that you have to...
Yeah, and it makes me wonder, I mean, is it possibly that Majula is attached to Things Betwixt in so much as it's in this limbo and these other areas are kind of separated in some way? You know, they've got this boundary stopping this flow, free flow between the areas. I don't know if I'm looking too much into it. Truth be told, it's probably just like hiding a loading screen between two areas or something. But
yeah, I mean, I think you're probably right that that's probably what it is. But if you're going to try to explain away the elements of the game in a lore type fashion, which we should do because From are very good, I think we should give them the benefit of the doubt. Do they generally go for stylized depictions of concepts? Because what I think you're suggesting is that the door itself is not necessarily a real door, but a stylized depiction of a link between dimensions. Rather than a portal or a vortex or whatever, you open a physical door.
Yeah.
It kind of seems a little bit like Doctor Who-ish.
I'm sure it's more than likely just a technology thing with the PlayStation or the Xbox itself, just blocking the two areas off in some way to save loading of complete areas.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
So walking through this... big wooden gate anyway, when you finally find that lever, is this little cavern that you sort of walk through. Nice sort of slow progression out to the forest itself, but you eventually end up in the forest. And it's interesting. Like, we learn later on that a war was fought between the giants and the soldiers in the area. And each time a giant dies, a great tree grows out of this giant's corpse. Mm.
And we learn that from Melintia.
Which we'll bring up a little later on in this episode, but it's just interesting to me that this war was fought over so much time and so many losses that there's been enough corpses to actually form an entire forest.
Exactly. It literally is a forest of fallen giants.
So you walk into a clearing, and for the first time since the tutorial, you'll see some enemies, some hollow infantry. And that's interesting because, as we've said, there was this war raging between the giants and this fort that was built just to stave off the giants.
Yes.
And so there's going to be this hierarchy of enemies that you encounter throughout this level. And we start with the infantry, and it's clear that they took any men that they could and threw them in any sort of soft armor and just threw a weapon in their hand. Some of them don't even have shields, and they put them up against these giants to defend against this invading horde.
Absolutely. I mean, later on, some of them don't even have weapons, but who can say what a hollow does over the course of you know, the eternity of dying and returning to life.
Oh, we walk a little further up this stream and you end up coming to the first bonfire. And one of the things that I've noticed with this game is each bonfire has a name. It describes the area that it's in. And in this case, the bonfire is called the Crestfallen's Retreat, which obviously suggests Solden's Retreat.
Solden's character is a retelling of a character called the Crestfallen Knight from Dark Souls. And in fact, that knight says, "Now I'm just Crestfallen."
Mm.
There was a Crestfallen Knight in Demon's Souls also. So to call it Crestfallen Retreat obviously refers to Solden. It's the same voice actor. But also, Solden is called Crestfallen Solden.
What I found interesting is, in the last week, I've actually gone back and read the comic. And in the opening panels of the comic, the protagonist meets with Solden. And sure enough, Solden's sitting there by a bonfire and...
In a forest?
Yes. And it's not entirely clear that it's definitely the Forest of the Fallen Giants, but I think there's a strong connection to suggest that this bonfire is actually the same one in the comic.
Absolutely. And it's a short stroll from there to where Solden is now.
Mm. So, how did you find this first area? I actually had so much trouble with it.
Really?
Yeah, and nobody else did. And you know what? What I've learned is... Either I've just adjusted to the game and learned the way it works, and now I've come back with a second character, in this case a cleric, and breezed through the area. Didn't die once. But my first character was Warrior, and I'm wondering, is Warrior maybe just really underpowered? Because I suffered. By the time I got through that area, none of the enemies were spawning anymore. That's how much I died.
In that area?
Oh, yeah.
You've got a cast, bro.
Master caster.
Yeah, you've got a cast. I just casted and they all just died. And then I went to there was a bonfire there, get more spells, cast some more. It was fine.
Now, from the bonfire, you head a little down the stream and eventually you get to this ladder, which leads up to this clearing. And up the top of the ladder, it's this beautiful environment. The first time I poked my head over that ladder, I was just like blown away. It was really nice sort of setting.
I mean, the whole damn thing looks good, but that looks particularly nice.
Yeah, and that was what hit me first. Like, wow, this is really nice. There's this massive tree growing out the middle, and it was just well set out. There was moss and greenery and all kinds of things growing on stuff. But that very quickly got stolen from me when I started getting attacked. It was this beautiful environment, but goddamn was it deadly.
And also there's guys shooting you from above.
And then the Hide Knight, and then another guy that's lying on the ground.
So just on the Hide Knight. The Hide Knight is that guy that some people online are calling him the White Knight because he's kind of white, but he's a Hide Knight from the region called Hide or Hade. And he
Shall we decide on that now? Hide or Hade?
Well, actually, I was going off what Solden said.
Hade's Tower of Flame lies beyond the far gate.
I think he said Hade, but I might be wrong.
I think it's Hade.
Yeah, I think it's Hade. The Hade Knight is passive. He's not aggressive unless you attack him.
You don't actually even know that he's alive. So when you do eventually provoke the Hade Knight and you overcome him, he drops his sword. And it's not made clear, but this is the first sword that you can pick up with an enchantment. It has a lightning enchantment.
Exactly. It's pretty decent, and it scales with faith.
Now, I have to wonder, why would the Hade Knight be there? He comes from Hade, which we learn is this city that's sunk into the sea, and it sunk eons ago, to the point where people don't even know anymore whether Hade is a country or if it was a whole continent or what. All we have left is the Hade's Tower of Flame, which we'll address, I believe, next episode. Yes. So, why is he there? Do you have any thoughts on the matter?
I couldn't begin to speculate. I mean, we know that Hade sunk into the sea, so the people had to go somewhere. And this isn't actually too far from Hade's Tower of Flame, unless you consider Majula to be some kind of transdimensional link rather than a physical link between these areas.
Yeah, and I suppose, I mean, he is sort of resting there completely unhostile. So maybe it's just that's where he crashed and that was it.
Just hanging out. And he's not doing anybody any harm.
Hmm. So, in any case, you pick up his sword, and the description explicitly says, "Straight sword originating in Hade. A special alloy makes it very durable. The composition of the alloy of these swords remains a mystery. But in Dranglake, the attempt to imitate it resulted in a similar Braddon steel." Nice little touch, I guess. They have different types of steel in this game. And
yeah, Guy steel and Braddon steel.
And the Hade steel is known particularly for its durability.
Also in that area, there's a path leading down, and the opening to that path is an opening I like to call Nature's Goatsy.
I never noticed. Now I'm never going to unsee it.
Yeah, we'll put a picture on the thing. It's definitely Nature's Goatsy. If you don't know what Goatsy is, Google it.
Don't.
It's a family affair, Googling that, though, so get your
oh, you're little nieces and nephews. Horrible man. You're a horrible, horrible man.
I encourage
man.
You to sit down by the fire. And it's G-O-A-T-S-E.
You're one of those orange soapstone comments that gets highly upvoted for no reason other than trolling.
I do like to leave a little bit of a facetious orange soapstone conversation.
Now, you go through this fog wall, and you end up going down this corridor, and this is the first time you're going to encounter a hollow soldier. I may have slipped up earlier and said hollow soldier. Up to this point, you've only
clarified that it was infantry.
Hollow infantry. This is a hollow soldier. Now, as we've discussed, this is a fort that's been made to defend against the giants, and these are clearly the first people that have some sort of training. But if you have a look at their armor, it's kind of a bit disappointing. I mean, there's nothing that I can see would be good defense against these giants, and having taken one on a little later in the episode is certainly not what I would want to be wearing to go up against them. But on top of that, they all have this sort of twisted, distorted neck. They kind of all look straight up.
It's like some of them are staring up at the ceiling.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if they maybe got stomped by these giants and they're just completely messed up from it.
Mangle fried.
Yeah. It's no wonder that they're hollow, to be perfectly honest. If you have a close look to their helm, it's an odd shape to begin with, but there's this tiniest little slit for them to see through.
Yeah.
And Christ, they must have suffocated before actually getting stomped by a giant. There's just nothing to see out of.
So from there, you go up a ladder and you discover the Cardinal Tower bonfire, where you also meet the old hag Valencia, who's a really interesting merchant.
She certainly got some character.
My name is Valencia. You're a stranger to this land. Oh, we get as strangers these days. Everybody's gone and run off. Dranglake's been a pile of rubble since the war fought long, long ago. When the giants crossed the sea.
She has some interesting things to say about the fort. She's the one that tells you that it was built to fight giants, and she's the one that tells you that when a giant dies, it turns into a tree.
So this is where we learn that sort of lore. But on top of this, she's a bit of a scallywag, you know. She's not well put together. She looks like she comes from some strong poverty, and she suggests that this has come from this town fighting these giants for so long, and everyone's left, and obviously there's not even a place to lay your head anymore. So she's gotten by packing up everything she owns into this big wooden backpack that she carries with her as a burden, but at the same time, I suppose it allows her to be a merchant, so she's just scrounging for whatever she can get.
Yeah, but is she just looking for sympathy? Because she's always going to be, help an old woman out. I'm thinking, I'll buy something off you, but you're just saying that.
It's a bit of both. I think she's become obviously a good player on the heartstrings, but at the same time, her heart's good. She's not malicious. That said, you can get some interesting items from her. The first of which being the key for the blacksmith's house in Majula.
And why does she have it?
Well, I would suggest she probably realized, as we heard from the last episode, Lenegrast set himself up in this house and walked away. And she's obviously seen an opportunity there and thought to herself, well, if I nick the key and lock his equipment in there, I've got a chance to make some money here. I think she's very...
She's horrible.
No, I wouldn't say horrible. I think she has a means to an end, and she knows how to achieve what she needs to get by.
But poor old Lenegrast, he's mentally disabled. He couldn't even work out how to climb through the window.
So, on top of this, she also has a Faris Lockstone, which we won't go into too much yet because it's going to come up a bit later, but just acknowledge that she's the first place you can get one of these.
By the way, Malencia will sell you the Traveling Merchant set, and the cap from that set raises your item discovery, which can be good if you're starting out and want to pick up a bunch of new life gems.
As you kill enemies.
Yeah, exactly.
Increase the drops.
Yeah, and it mentions in the item description another land, Lanifir, which I like to make note of those little lore things. By Melentia and the bonfire is a large statue of a robed lady standing over the bonfire.
Hmm. I don't know. I don't know if I'm looking too much into it. I mean, I've been spoiled so much with Dark Souls 1, knowing that every fine detail has some implication to it. And in this game, I'm not so sure yet, but in this case, I kind of tried to do some digging. And it's this beautiful statue of a lady in robes in this holy pose, and she's also covered in blood. And it's just this nice juxtaposition between this very pure woman, but also covered in the blood of a battle that's clearly occurred just in that very room. And I've got a few theories of my own on possibly what this statue could be. I haven't cemented them yet, so we might bring it up a bit later, but at the moment, just acknowledge that she's there as well.
Acknowledged. Out the front door, you'll be able to view a courtyard below you, which is accessible by jumping down some scaffolding.
A little further down the scaffolding, there's not too much of interest until you hit the floor. And the first thing that stood out to me was these petrified statues. And
yeah,
I can't for the life of me figure out why they're there, because
we know from the previous game that when a person gets cursed, a petrified statue of them appears in other people's worlds.
Precisely, and these all appear to be directly in front of a flame-spitting salamander. And to the best of my knowledge, those salamanders don't turn you to stone, they set you on fire. So
yeah, and they don't curse you.
Maybe foreshadowing?
Maybe.
I guess we don't know yet, but to me
maybe
it just
maybe five-shadowing. Just that was the worst thing I've
felt
said.
A bit out of touch.
Yeah. And also, upon entering that tunnel,
yeah,
you get ambushed from behind, and there's someone shooting from the front. And those little statues block you sometimes when you try to roll.
Not only that, you have to have the confidence walking there to begin with, because you're this low-level character, and you can see fire all over the floor.
Yeah.
I was convinced I couldn't go in there.
Yeah, but the fire obviously doesn't hurt you. It's just
show. Yeah, effect. So, in any case, as you pointed out, you can walk in the corridor, and it's a bit dangerous, but if you make it down there, there's a little door on the left, and this is where you can pick up the first flame-enchanted weapon.
Yes, which scales with intellect, very good for mages. And at the end of the tunnel, there's a flame salamander shooting firebombs at you. I kind of thought you couldn't kill him or that it was a bit of a waste of time, but you can kill him, and it is a bit of a waste of time, because, spoiler alert, after he dies, you can't get through the hole he's looking through anyway.
Mm, so you obviously thought it might be the way to the next area, but
yeah,
turns
well,
out
like
it's not.
Some secret behind him, but nope. Why do I know? I've just written bastardly here on my notes. why does it say that? Okay, who knows?
Just bastardly.
Bastardly, all right. Maybe I didn't like that salamander.
Okay, so in any case, that pretty much clears that down area. There's no real reason to go down there except to grab the flame sword at the moment. And we can head back up to the bonfire now.
Yep, and now you can go down the ladder that's to the right of the bonfire. Interestingly, my housemate's playing this game, and he told me that he'd been to that bonfire and didn't really know where to go next. I described where I was, and he said, "How did you get there?" I said, "I went down the ladder." He said, "What ladder?" He hadn't actually noticed that there was a ladder there, so he's running around the game, searching every door that he can, trying to find a way out.
So
he didn't notice the hole was in the ground.
I missed a lever next to a big wooden door, but he missed a massive gaping hole in the ground. I think he's up.
Yeah. So down the ladder, you'll encounter a few enemies that are playing possum. There's a few locked doors that you can't get through, but there's a path. If you turn right from the bottom of the ladder, then on your left, there's a path.
Yeah, with a fog gate. And I can't help feeling like these undead soldiers that are sort of sitting there pretending as though they're dead. It's as though the game's trying to teach the importance of lock-on, because you attack them and they immediately get up, and you can lock onto them at that point, but it's incredibly difficult. You've just attacked them and they're attacking you back. And so you end up in this state where you've hit them once and they're about to hit you back and you're not locked on and you're looking the wrong way and all this kind of stuff. And it sort of shows you.
Yeah, I agree. But it just teaches you by being broken and stupid. And I really don't like that. It makes me grumpy.
So you head out this fog gate, right? And you end up walking up this massive tree growing out of the ground.
Another thing about that tree is it's actually the same color as the wood of the trees that you'll later see growing out of giants.
Mm, so it strongly suggests that, as we said earlier, the forest has grown from the corpses of these giants.
Absolutely.
Off to the right, there's some broken down sort of housing and buildings that we'll touch on in a little bit. But right now, we're going to go up to the ramparts up the top of this route.
Mm. Imagine those days fighting those giants, you know, all those guys running around getting smashed to bits. It wouldn't have been easy. And those guys were just dressed, like you said, in that little pissy armor.
Not only wouldn't it have been easy, we keep getting told this fort was designed to defend against the giants, and yet it just doesn't feel like it was built with the giants in mind at all. Like, we go up to this rampart up the top, and there's these wooden sort of barricades which you can hide behind and defend yourself with, but they don't seem like they'd be of any use to giants. Everything was designed at a human scale, we're spoiled with the last game with Anor Londo, where you've got the little intricacies like the big steps for the
giants, but bear in mind, the they area, didn't,
and the little steps for the humans. But
bear in mind, they didn't build that area to accommodate giants.
Of course.
You wouldn't build a big thoroughfare for giants to march on through. But I take your point about those wooden barriers. I think actually I might have seen some arrows stuck in them. It's not like they were fighting giants at all.
So it makes me wonder, I mean, has the fort maybe been used for other purposes since the battle with the giants? I suppose that's the most logical explanation.
Or is it just hollows fighting hollows, scrabbling over souls?
Possibly, yeah. Now, as you get to the end of the rampart, there's this undead soldier throwing these firebombs at you, and there's this big wall full of powder kegs. And I went a long time not realizing this, but there's actually a shortcut opportunity here. The reason I didn't notice this is because I've played the previous games and I know how important it is to avoid these kegs that look like they're going to blow up on you. So I'd always roll through them or get rid of them. But if you're a slightly less aware player, you'd probably end up having a firebomb thrown at you while down there, or maybe even striking them with your fire sword and blowing them up. And when you do, it blows this massive hole in the wall, which leads directly to where the bonfire was. So it's this
very handy,
nice shortcut. It's absolutely worth doing. So if you want to do it in the most simple way, just, you know, maybe buy a few firebombs from Malentia or something and trigger it yourself. Or worst case, you try and get the guy throwing firebombs at you to trigger it for you.
But just be weird, the subsequent explosion
quite likely knock you on your hole.
Knock me on my hole. I don't think people in other countries say that.
Well, now they will.
So with that hole in front of you, a right turn will take you down some stairs and then down a ladder. At the bottom of the ladder, you'll find a green blossom.
And the green blossom is a little interesting lore-wise. We know that green blossoms existed in Dark Souls 1.
Mm-hmm.
They've obviously lasted all this time through to the time of Dark Souls 2. And it's even suggested with the item description this time around. They have a bitter taste, but once people discovered their properties of regenerating stamina at an increased rate, they were almost harvested to extinction by merchants. They're also described as a green weed, which I find a little odd because all experiences I've had with weed, it sort of slows down your stamina, not increases it.
Yeah, you lose stamina.
Now, from here on the right, there's a very dangerous room, but a little up past it is Mild-Mannered Pate. And Mild-Mannered Pate's an interesting character.
Yeah, he kind of... I'm not sure if I trust that guy.
My name is Pate. I journey hither and thither on a sort of treasure hunt, you might call it. Be careful out there. There's talk of unsavory bandits who prey upon travelers like yourself. Oh yes, you be cautious if you go any farther. There's treasure in there for certain, but the entrance locks from behind. I was with this warrior, you see, and he insisted that he go inside first. The rather brusque fellow tried to swipe the loot for himself, but it trapped him inside. I still have the gent's ring. I do hope he wasn't harmed.
He mentions that there's bandits in the area that are preying on people, and he also says that just past him there's a trap, that if you walk in the door it closes behind you. And he tells a story about being on a treasure hunt with a warrior who insisted on marching ahead and getting the treasure for himself but got trapped. And then he has a kind of almost sarcastic lament about that guy and says, I do hope he didn't come to... What did he say? Come a cropper or some? He has a really weird manner of speaking, actually.
He seems nice enough at the moment, and he's giving you advice, but doesn't he remind you of Patches?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just got that demeanor about him, and it's the way he presents his words. They seem like they've just got a little bit of snake bite behind them.
Yeah.
Either way, he tells you that through the gate is a dangerous area, and you being the fearless warrior that you are, you trudge on through there.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? I didn't. I went a different way, and I approached that area from the back. And so if you go through the door, like what I gather happens is you fight a few guys, turn right, and there's a bunch of guys at the base of some stairs. I came around the very long, convoluted back way and approached those guys from behind, and they were facing away from me. Is that what you did?
It is what I did the first time, but only because I walked through the gate and immediately died.
Oh, I didn't even do that.
So basically, if you walk through the gate at this point, the gate does close behind you. And if you die, then you only have the option of going the direction that you took, which is to go the long way around, which we'll cover in a moment. But if you don't die, then you can approach it from this direction and you walk through. And sure enough, yeah, you see some guys at the bottom of the stairs. But you also find a corpse, and the corpse has some aromatic ooze on it.
Yummy. Corpse with some aromatic ooze on it.
Well, while we're on the note, Christ, it's described as a sticky white substance that radiates a pale white light. It's sticky. It's white. It's aromatic. It's oozy.
I think I know what you're thinking of. Radiates a pale white light and aromatic. You must eat a lot of pineapple.
But in any case, the aromatic ooze, it allows you to buff your right-hand weapon with magic damage. And the magic damage is good for apparently armored foes and scaled creatures. So maybe a bit of foreshadowing to dragons a little later on in the game.
There's also a hidden wall nearby, which contains some interesting pickups, like a sorcerer's staff. And if you didn't inherit a staff when you started the game, that's your first staff.
Absolutely. It actually says so in its item description. There's not much lore significant about it, but it does describe itself as probably your first staff for most sorcerers. And the description also is mostly educational because it tells you how to apply magic or attune magic at a bonfire.
Yeah.
So if you clear out this area and get back out, and talk to Pate again. He tells you how he's worried about the brave warrior that went in first. And again, it's sort of in that...
It's weasel words.
...condescending way that makes you wonder. But he gives you a white soapstone. Yeah. And at this point, I think...
He's trying to tell you something. You need to take a bath or... I mean, who gives people soap when they first meet them?
Women.
And he finds this convoluted way to convince you to take the soap off him, but he's just really telling you you stink.
Don't drop the soapstone.
Oh, I do. I drop my soapstone all the time. I do.
Now, the description for the white soapstone, it explicitly says, the flow of time is distorted in these lands, and the white soapstone allows undead to assist one another. Now, what stood out to me with that one is, it allows undead to assist one another. Not like the previous game, where you had to be human. In this game, it doesn't matter.
Well, what did they mean by undead? It could be a colloquial term for everyone, because everyone's affected by the curse, and everyone's coming back from the dead. So even when you've consumed a human effigy and you look like a human, technically you're undead, you've died many, many times.
You make a point, I suppose.
Yeah, but the point you raise is still valid.
Is it?
Well, I was trying to help you out, but no, it's not.
So, in any case, it teaches you the lesson of going back and talking to NPCs again and again, because you wouldn't get the soapstone otherwise.
So, by the way, speaking of stones, where do I get my orange sign soapstone?
You haven't got it yet?
No. Everyone else is leaving messages.
Because you don't get it.
Oh.
If you haven't noticed, you can leave messages immediately in this game.
What's the control for that?
You just hit start, and there's a menu option next to the game options where you can read previous messages and your previous messages and vote on messages and write messages.
Well, I did not know that.
The more you know. You should put that up the top as a pro tip.
What does that mean, the more you know? What's it from?
A show.
What show?
The More You Know.
Is it called The More You Know? Maybe you're right. I was trying to catch you out, you know, but... didn't work because I didn't actually know the answer myself. So bullshit,
you ass.
That's what Bambi's mum said before she died. Like, okay, I don't know. It tell me any bullshit.
Now, we mentioned that on the way to Pate, you passed a room, which is very dangerous. The reason it's dangerous...
it's because all those dudes inside, but also there's this crossbows that are in a ring facing the door.
Yeah, if you hesitate for even a second, you end up skewered with four bloody bolts.
But if you play your cards right, you rush in there and rush back out. One of those guys will chase you out there and get shot in the back.
Best to do that, because with four guys in there, it can come very overwhelming very quickly. But sure enough, if you clear out the room in any case, because you're a... suave, sophisticated fellow with a sword, you get to pick up a great soul arrow, which for the casters is probably a great boon at the moment. Now, also next to the great soul arrow is a blue wooden shield, which, again, nothing hugely lore significant, but it made me wonder, could it maybe suggest that there's been a mage in the area? We've had the aromatic ooze, we picked up the catalyst, we picked up the great soul arrow, and now we're picking up this shield, which is blue, which is lightweight, that sort of feels like it would go along with a mage class.
Yeah. I suppose the other thing that it could be doing is, if you weren't a caster and you're playing through that bit and it's so damned hard and you hate your life, it's constant reminders that it could be doing a better job.
From looking at all the other casters that have died in the area.
No, just from going... boy, I wish I had the intelligence to cast spells. Oh, and I picked up a spell as well. Oh, I should have made a different decision. How horrible my life is. Why did you write that Pate's friend, the warrior, tried to swipe the Treasure for himself? Not treasure, but tree assure.
Oh, God.
You even put quotation marks around it, and it says tree assure. So I thought that it was something significant. Like, he tries to take the tree assure for himself. I thought, oh, that's that man. That's interesting.
Nope, not significant at all. Yeah. Just my incompetence.
Behind the ballistas is a hole in the floor. And underneath the hole in the floor, you will find the first booby-trapped chest. You try to open it, and this damned crossbow pops out and shoots in all directions.
Oh, is that what happened for you?
Yeah.
Because for me, it infected me with poison. And I've heard that there are other chests, but I've never seen a chest like that. So it seems like it has a dual purpose.
Yeah. So different based on what? I don't know. We need to work that out.
Not sure. Yeah, it's maybe good. It's just random.
It's good that we chatted today.
So I guess what we're saying is you'll go down this hole and you'll come across a chest and it's going to do one of two things. But behind the chest is your first Faris contraption.
Yeah, now this is really interesting. The Faris Lockstone is what goes into the Faris contraption.
And yeah, which we mentioned you can get your first one from Melentia.
Melentia will sell you one. The description of the item says, Faris the Vagabond was a legend who wandered the lands, creating contraptions to help those in sincere and dire need. How he means tested their sincere and dire need, I don't know. Any old idiot can do it. The scope of his travels was so wide that the Faros, not Faris, but the Faros, has been mistakenly credited with many inventions that were crafted by others.
Yeah, so I find that interesting. I actually found a lot of these Faris contraptions throughout my game, and they kind of felt out of place. I'm like, why on earth is there this weird, ghostly-looking face on the wall in all these different areas?
Yeah, I mean...
And I suppose the description kind of hand-wavingly explains it. He's gone around and he's set these things up.
I mean, I suppose the question is, because it kind of seems like Faris the Vagabond was so magnanimous and so nice that he goes about and goes to all this effort, all this improbable effort, seemingly impossible degrees of effort to place little devices around that you can put something in the mouth of that helps you. But I suppose the question is, what was Faris the Vagabond? If Faris the Vagabond was a godlike figure, then it's not that far-fetched that he would do all this stuff.
Maybe that's the case. Maybe, yeah. I suppose we need to learn more about the character himself, and I don't know that we're going to get much more from the game at the moment. Maybe we should play around with that idea. It's possible he was a god of the area.
Yeah. So activating the Faris device by putting the Faris Lockstone into the mouth of the little face that's carved into it causes a ghostly face to appear on a wall.
Yeah. And it's a wall that you can't strike before the face is there. But once it is...
Once it is, you can strike it and it disappears. Behind the wall is some chests. Within the chest, you find a titanite slab. And you find a really good ring, the Chloranthi ring.
Yeah, I wonder about the Titanite slab. I mean, this was the rarest item, or one of the rarest items from the last game, and it was the item that allowed you to fully level up your weapon down certain paths. In this game, it's the same to the best of my knowledge, but it just feels so early in the game to be getting an item like that.
I really agree. The Chloranthi ring is interesting. It resembles a green blossom, actually, if you look at it, the little marijuana bud that we mentioned earlier. And it increases your stamina regeneration, just like eating a green blossom does.
Mm. But there's also a door down there that's locked. And to the best of my knowledge, I'm not sure that you get a key to unlock it, because I've never had to. Basically, I thought, well, here's a door that's locked. I might as well try striking it. And when I did, it was as though you were knocking, because you were greeted within a few moments by three very scary soldiers that wanted to beat your head in. So it's like, knock, knock, knock. Hello, who's there? Death.
I don't know if I did that.
You might just not have noticed. In there, you actually pick up another ring, which, nice, two rings nearby. This one gives you a little bit of extra health. It's the life ring is what it's called. It only gives you 5% extra bonus to health. Again, nothing terribly law significant there, but could be a nice help at this point in the game.
So back up the ladder, around the ballista and out the hole in the wall, and directly ahead you'll see a courtyard. And across the courtyard is the first old ironclad soldier. I think the description of their item... It's
so cool.
Yeah, it's just spectacular. It says... One day, warriors wearing decrepit armor emerged from Dragon Lake Castle and quietly assumed positions amongst the Royal Army. Not one of them ever spoke a word or revealed the face under the mask. I think what they're saying is that these soldiers were created or manufactured within Dragon Lake Castle to join the army.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, are they summons, like empty husks of armor that are just there to fill in the ranks? Or are they actual people that have been imbued with some sort of mystical power to wear this armor? I mean, what we do know is that they were created by the old ironclad king with the enchantment of souls. Does that mean that the armor itself has been enchanted with souls to be alive? Or is it the
alchemist style?
Yeah, I'm just not sure at the moment. I don't think we'll ever really know, but the illusion there, I think, is that, They're an empty husk, which is why they never take off their mask. They never speak. They're there to serve a purpose, and that is to be a hardcore motherfucker with a shitload of health.
And I think that situation would be really awkward as well. It just says they emerged from the castle all messed up and stood among all the soldiers. You'd be like, who's this guy? He's like twice as tall as me.
Mm.
They're pretty deadly, those guys.
Oh, yeah. But one thing I did discover, which I thought was really cool, is if you provoke him and then kite him back and quickly run back into the room with the ballistas and line him up, you can take him out with two shots from a ballista. Now, around the corner from the damaged sponge that is the old ironclad soldier is the first giant that you'll actually see with a tree growing out of it. I think the illusion, at least at first, is you're not sure whether it is a giant, but it's very clear. You can see the figure. At this point, you haven't actually seen a giant, so you don't know, but it's clear that it's this...
It's a big...
This humanoid shape.
Thing. And actually, I'll be honest, I never noticed there was a giant there the first time, and I'm trying to look at every angle and observe every detail, and I didn't even...
Wow. Because I did, because it's very clear, because when you stand in front of it, you get a prompt, and you can click X to examine, and this message just comes up that says, alas, nothing happened, which sort of alludes that something should happen eventually.
Yeah, it sounds
like we just don't know
change.
The secret yet. Yeah. So we'll definitely be coming back to that later on in the game. So through the door with the ironclad soldier that you've now taken out through one way or another, ballistas, blowing him up, taking him on hand to hand, is a corridor that leads to this sort of hallway by the shore, and the wall leading out to the shore has been damaged and broken. You can see holes, and you can see the ocean and the tide and the waves, and there's this massive hole in the wall which you can see has been caused by this enormous sword. And I started watching footage for this game about a year ago, and I remember that being one of the first things I saw in a video advertising it. I just got so excited when I saw that. The scope, the scale, the size of this sword, it just made me immediately start wondering, like, where has this come from? Who owned the sword? What is the significance here? And that's all you got to see. And sure enough, now in game, I'm sort of shadowing what I saw in this video a year ago, and I can see where this sword has come from, and
it's cool.
Supremely cool. There's these two enormous statues on the coast, which obviously there to dissuade any people coming to attack the fort, and we learn that these giants have come from across the ocean.
Mm.
And so it's sort of like they're there to be a warning that those who enter are going to be up against some mean bastards.
But, and then the thing is, those statues are all smashed to pieces.
One of them's missing a head, one of them's missing an arm.
And the sword hand carrying that sword has been smashed through the side of the castle. And the thing is that if you look at the size of the giants that you fight, none of them are even... Well, later on you will meet a giant, spoiler alert. And he's not nearly big enough to have affected that kind of thing.
No, but I guess it all just alludes to a great battle that's occurred.
All the giants working together don't seem to be able to do that.
Maybe.
That sword is just immense.
Hmm. On that note, you get a very clear view of the soldiers, and he's got a very distinct shield. And so I've gone through with my penchant for lore searching here, and I've looked at all the shields in the game, and I couldn't match it. It's got this sort of eye down the bottom and a trident. It's quite specific.
Mm.
If there was a shield in the game that matched it, you'd be able to find it. So if anybody else can find out some lore about that, or what armor he's wearing, or what sword he has, or, you know, if the shield relates to anything, let us know, because I wasn't able to find anything there.
So back down the sword into the castle, and on your right, you'll find a room with a crystal lizard in it. Those that play Dark Souls will remember the crystal lizards, and they serve essentially the same purpose here. You get a chance...
Titanite pinatas.
Exactly, yeah. You get a chance to kill him, and a type of Titanite will be spawned. It seems to be random what type of Titanite is spawned after you kill him.
With this first one, does seem as though you might get a large Titanite chart, or you might just get a normal one.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, it all helps at this point in the game. You need it to level up those first few levels.
But he quickly starts burrowing into the ground, the lizard. And if you don't kill him within a certain amount of seconds, then he's going to disappear. Fortunately, unlike the last game, if you go back to a bonfire and return, so too will he.
Mm. It's acknowledged in game that not much is known about the lizards because they're masters of escape. And so you either kill them, in which case they disappear, or you try and capture them, and in the time you do, they have this ability to vanish anyway. So they've never been studied by the characters in game. There's not much known about them at the moment. But as we said, they're Titanite pinatas, and I suppose now is a good time to at least briefly touch on what Titanite is and its importance.
So Titanite is the resource used to upgrade weapons. Different types of Titanite imbue the weapons with different properties.
Yeah, in this game, it actually says when you come across these different types of Titanite, like, say, Fade Stone, the description will say something along the lines of sorcerers at the Melfian Academy once attempted to imbue the Titanite with various elements, but have said to have failed. Someone else, however, must have succeeded, though, because what else could explain this stone? So it suggests that we've got Titanite, and then we've got these variations of Titanite where people have imbued them with certain properties. Melfia apparently failed, but somebody succeeded.
Well, they're said to have failed. Interestingly, they describe Titanite as a gift of the gods, and in Dark Souls 1, they also tied them to the gods and said that a nameless blacksmith deity who forged the weapons of the other gods was responsible for the creation of Titanite.
Yeah. So Titanite is something that was created by a blacksmith deity.
Yeah.
Right, so up from here, you come across a shortcut doorway, which leads back up to the ladder to the bonfire. And just before you open it, you'll pick up a few fire arrows. Again, nothing terribly lore significant, but I do like the description. It suggests that they're tipped with charcoal resin. It's a nice touch. Rather than just saying we've got these magical fire arrows that just happen to be fire, they actually borrow from lore in the game itself. We know charcoal resin imbues weapons with fire properties, and sure enough, these are tipped with charcoal.
Now's a good time to go back to the bonfire, recover your Estus and recover your health and spells, because after this, we're going to go down the elevator and through the fog door and fight the first boss of Dark Souls 2, the last giant.
Yeah, and just before the fog gate, you can summon mild-mannered Pate if you're human.
Bear in mind also that the more people you have summoned to aid you, and you can have two, the more health your enemies are going to have.
And this especially applies to bosses. So absolutely. In this case, to progress Pate's storyline, you have to summon him for this fight. If he dies in the fight, that's the end of Pate for the game. But if you can carry him through this fight with the last giant, then you'll be able to progress with his storyline. Be aware, he will make the boss have more health.
And the boss fight itself is a relatively easy one, I found.
Right, but before that, you walk through the fog gate. You're actually greeted with this excellent cinematic of him angering himself awake and ripping his arm out from under a rock. And you can see that his arm's quite damaged.
And his other arm seems to be attached to something as well.
And when you do prevail over this boss, his soul item, and in his case, it describes that he was actually bound there by the soldiers that obviously prevailed over the giants throughout the war with the giants. And this was sort of, I guess, his last hurrah. He was resting and had given up at this point, but you walking in provoked him enough to rip his arm out from under that rock and actually come at you.
Yes. And also, you can see that he's been in a fight with a bunch of humans because he's pierced all over with swords. He's got a big pillar through his chest. He obviously took a beating.
Now, what I found interesting with this boss is this whole time we've been hearing about these giants, but when you see him, he's got this big hole in his face.
Yeah, like, instead of a face, he's just got a big hole, which he makes weird grunting noises out of.
Yeah, I found it funny. His face is best described as the letter O. It's just a round circle with a hole in it. And all the noises he makes are "oh" sounds, and I thought it was rather
like a Pokemon.
Maybe. But what bothered me is the last game, we come across giants. We come across the Tomb of the Giants, and there's a massive giant skull in Ash Lake, which even to this day, years after the game's release, there's still speculation over this skull. So if you get down to Ash Lake in Dark Souls 1, there's just this weird lone skull by itself, larger than any of the giants in the Tomb of the Giants, but it definitely looks like a giant skull. And as I said, there's still speculation. Some people argue that it's actually a dragon skull. I personally don't see it, but they can suggest that it's weathered. Nonetheless, they're definitely more humanoid. These giants just have a giant hole in their face.
Yeah, and is that the effects of time, or are they just different giants, or
It makes you wonder.
So like the previous game, the soul of a boss has two functions. You can either absorb it to get a large number of souls, which I wouldn't advise you do, because the other function is you can turn it into an item.
You also get a soldier's key. So defeat the giant, get his soul, get a soldier's key. The description for the soldier's key is very helpful. It tells you it opens the soldier's doors.
Well, you wouldn't want the soldier's key opening someone else's door, would you? It doesn't make any sense. So back to the Cardinal Tower bonfire to rest and recover, and then you can head to the area where the tree route carries you up to the rampart. And instead of going up to the rampart, you can turn back, and if you're very careful, you can jump onto a little wooden ledge. And there you can have a fight with a few more Hollowed Knights, and you can play around on the scaffolding there.
In this area, though, the only real significant thing is Kale.
Yes. Now, Kale is an NPC. You find him scavenging around in the dark like he lost his contacts.
Yeah, actually, when I first came across him, there was an orange soapstone right behind him as he's bent over on the ground that just said, Rhea, with about 200 upvotes. I thought it was hilarious.
I love how you call them upvotes, too.
Yeah. Shout out to our Reddit fans.
He seems like he's a bit out of it, actually, that dude, and he's forgetting heaps. Maybe he smoked a green blossom.
Maybe.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just daydreaming, I think. My name is Kale. I'm a traveler, like yourself. I'm navigating the continent to create a map. Why cartography, you ask? Well, that's a good question. When I first came to this forsaken land, it was a curse? Something about a curse? How embarrassing. I seem to have lost my focus.
But, look, old Kale here, forgetting what his purpose is, he's a cartographer, and all he knows is maps, it seems. He sort of bonds with you over maps. Mm. And sure enough, he tells you that he's got a house which he's sort of squatting in back in Majula, which is the big mansion that we haven't been able to open until this point. And after you bond with him a bit over maps, he actually gives you the key to this mansion.
Yeah, because he thinks you're a maps nerd like him.
Mm. Don't know how he got that, considering you just sort of stood there and politely listened to him ramble on without saying anything.
He's on his way to being hollowed, but he's like, you know, old people. Old people, you listen long enough, they think you have the same interests and it's never shut up about.
Now, the soldier's key is also useful for the stairs back at the bonfire leading up. You come across a door, and this door, you need the key to open, or you notice it's a bit damaged and you can blast through it with a weapon. So, yeah.
I actually found that an enemy on the other side of that opened it for me.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, and he cut me as he did it.
In this room, you get to pick up your small white soapstone. And I suppose now is probably a good time to touch on the difference between the normal soapstone and the small white soapstone.
Yeah.
This time around, it actually summons you into a friendly's world for a small period of time, I think about 5 minutes. And it's mostly there to assist them through the harder parts of the level, because the more enemies you kill, the shorter the time limit as well. So the best idea with this one is to sort of drop it down, you know, maybe next to the ballistas, where it's a particularly difficult area. So you can go in, you can help some people out. Killing those enemies in the area will knock you out of their world in quicker time and you'll get success. And after this next patch, as they've said, you'll also become human at the end of it, which is nice.
Yeah, it's very cool.
The white soapstone, however, is used for mostly boss fights. It does have a time limit as well, but it's a lot longer than the small white soapstone, and so the best way to succeed with that one is to, again, kill the area boss.
Absolutely. With a bit of skill from here, you can drop down onto the tree that's growing out of the middle of the room, and on the branches of that tree, you'll find a divine blessing.
Yeah, just above the bonfire, which brings me back to the point that I was making earlier about this statue. The divine blessing being there, it sort of seemed an odd place for it, and it reminded me again of that conversation we were having about Guinevere last episode. So we know that the divine blessings have come from Guinevere, and this statue does have some sort of a resemblance to her, and I've toyed with the idea that it's possible this statue could be a homage to Guinevere. We'll probably touch on a bit more next episode, but it seems Guinevere may have a bit more influence and significance to this world this time around.
Mm. Ooh.
But one thing you do notice is it seems the statue's boobs aren't quite big enough to be her, so I'm not sure.
Guinevere's boobs were, like, bigger than I was.
She definitely has the sort of veil and the floaty sort of outfit that Guinevere wears, though.
So if you go back down the hole, and across the bridge to an area where you will find a sleeping soldier. And upon killing him, you can then open the door with the soldier's key. You can go out to the left after you go through there and you find a really interesting door.
It's very stylized, very, it always stands out. It's very unique to this area.
Absolutely. And it asks you when you approach it, without even interacting with it, to produce the seal of the king. That's all it says, produce the seal of the king.
So it's obviously, again, something that we're going to be coming back to later. It's not something that we can do at this point in the game. But a little bit up from there is another chest which holds a ring of restoration. Now, this ring, it slowly restores your health over time. But this one is interesting. It suggests that it comes from the House of Osteria. And this house ruled over the sacred land of Lindelt. Lindelt was actually in a war with Dranglake, and Lindelt entered this war with the Archdrake sect, which is a cult that's known for their ancient rituals and powerful miracles.
The ring description actually mentions the house and says that the legend states that as long as that house owns the ring, the people of Lindelt would live in peace and safety. Well, we know that actually the Archdrake sect were the soldiers of Lindelt fighting at war against Dranglake. So I don't know, did the family lose that ring before that war began? Is that what the suggestion is?
Could be that while the battle occurred, it was a spoil of war that the opposing team managed to get their hands on, and it's now been locked up in this fort.
Yeah, because it is in Dranglake, so who knows?
So at this point, we turn back around and go through that door we unlocked with the soldier's key and cross the bridge. And there's an archway, which if you enter and turn right, you'll come across another locked door, which you can open with the soldier's key. And this leads into a corridor with some Turtle Knights.
That's right, Turtle Knight being another name for the old Ironclad Knights.
Hmm.
So down through that corridor and out to the left, you'll see a little housing area. And in that housing area, there's a bonfire called Soldier's Rest. Interesting that that's kind of almost like the barracks, perhaps. The soldiers all live in that area.
Yeah, that's the kind of feeling I got. There's just sort of run-down houses and stuff now, but it didn't seem like there was a lot of battle going on there. It looked like it was probably where they went for the end of their day.
Yeah, you know, wind down after killing some giants.
But in the room very next door to the bonfire is another one of those giants with a tree growing out of it. And this one actually says, "A giant rests in peace." Now, this one actually has an interesting property. Are you familiar with what the seed of the Tree of Giants does in game, Church?
It's got interesting PvP implications, doesn't it? Because generally in the previous game, you get invaded. You've got to deal with whoever's invading you, plus any enemies that happen to be around. Whereas in this game, you can use that seed as an item when you get invaded, and it turns the area enemies against the invader.
So what happens with this actual tree, though, is the more you get invaded, the more chance there will be that a seed of the Tree of Giants will spawn there. So apparently there's about a 10% chance that one will spawn there anyway, but each time you get invaded, that chance goes up by 10%. So it's the game giving you more opportunity to
defend yourself, really.
Yeah. It sympathizes with you if you're of the kind that's getting invaded a lot and sort of giving you an opportunity to fight back when you get invaded with the NPCs in the level as well. So now we've pretty much tied up all the loose ends for the level. All we have left is the next boss, which is the Pursuer.
Important to note, this is an optional boss. You don't have to fight the Pursuer.
Right, but it does make it a lot easier to get to the Lost Bastille from here.
The Lost? What did you say, the Lost?
Bastille.
Bastille. Okay, no, that's look, that's fine. You call it a bestie if you want.
It's my bestie.
It's my BFF.
Well, I'm sorry. If we're going with Hade over Hyde, then I can have my bestie.
Yeah, if you say so. Okay. No, look, if that's how you want to play it.
Hade.
So to reach the next boss, a visit to the Cardinal Bonfire is required. So you get the opportunity to rest and recover all those accoutrements you get from resting at a bonfire. And from there, down the ladder, through the door of the last giant, up some stairs, and you'll find the fog gate. So the Pursuer himself is dropped off by a giant crow. And crows have some significance to Dark Souls. We know that it was a crow that took you from the Undead Asylum when you were the Chosen Undead in the first game to Firelink Shrine. We also know that the Goddess of Sin, Velka, is...
Her symbol is the crow. She has strong ties to crows. And this is expanded upon in the Painted World of Ariamis that has a strong tie to Velka and crows. So it's very clear that Velka is the Goddess of Sin and she is symbolized by the crow. And this Pursuer, being carried around by Crows suggest that he has some ties to Sin as well, and it's sort of suggested that maybe he's fighting you to atone for his own sins, because his soul item actually describes that he seeks the bearer of the sign and will not rest until his target is slain, which suggests that he's going to hunt you down as much as he can until he finally kills you.
Yeah, and it fits with his name, the Pursuer.
Hmm. How'd you find this fight, Church?
A little bit frustrating at first, but that principle that we discussed before about moving away from the opponent's attacking hand and towards their defending hand worked really well. So I circled around him towards his shield, and I found that very helpful.
Yeah, huge amounts of damage, but very easy to dodge his attacks with some rolls. Yes. But he has incredible defense stats, which I think goes in hand with his look. He's this incredibly hulking, well-polished, armored guy. Wall of power, basically.
Yeah. And if you look very closely at his armor, actually, he has faces all over it, I believe.
Yeah, I noticed that. It's as though there's maybe souls within him that are trying to sort of fight their way out.
Maybe it's just scary armor.
Maybe. But there's two ways to fight him. You can either go the brute method of wheedling him down slowly with damage, or you can actually run up past him and take him out with two ballistas that are standing there, and two shots seem to do it.
You have to be very careful.
Incredible damage.
I found out that you could do that, incidentally, by shooting the ballistas, but I was never able to line him up and get the shot. And also I found that if you hang out near those ballistas for too long, he'll come up and take a swing at you and destroy them. So you have to be very careful about that.
You can't destroy them yourself, but if he hits them, they're gone, and that route is no longer viable to take him out, so you're just going to have to bull rush him. But when you do finally take him out, along with his soul, you also get the Ring of Blades. This is a ring which increases your attack, which is nice. And at this point in the game, it's definitely a boon to your damage, and it's a really cool item. But the item description for the ring actually says that it's modeled after the Mad King Alkin's weapon of choice. I'm not sure what that meant. I had a look at the ring, and it's got a weird design.
Do you know, it reminds me a bit of the Caestus, you know, like the hand weapons that you can get.
It actually reminded me of shurikens, which you don't get in the game. I suppose you get throwing knives, but I can't imagine that any warrior would fight with throwing knives.
Yeah.
But it then goes on to say that the kingdoms of Alkin and Ven long ago flourished on these very grounds, and they were both founded by the same man, but were reduced to rivalry and spite.
Yes, indeed. By looking at some of the canonically approved, but additional
literature,
sources of information, like the guidebook, we find that actually some of the areas you explore were part of Alkin or part of Ven.
So Huntsman's Copes, Harvest Valley, and Earthen Peak were all part of Alkin, whereas...
And the Bastille, or as Jamie would say, Bastille.
Bastille.
The Bastille. Is that an island off the coast of what used to be Ven?
Mm. So after taking out the Pursuer, you're left on the fighting grounds, and you've got another fog gate that opens up at the other side. And this is actually a fog gate that's between a crack in the enormous head of that statue that we saw earlier. We mentioned that one of them had lost its hand, the other one had lost its head, and sure enough, this is where it is. So you walk through it, and you find another one of those giant trees, and again, another message saying, alas, nothing happened when you interact with it.
Mm, but you also discover a nest, and if you've played the first Dark Souls game, you know exactly how that's going to play out. Approach the nest and kneel within it, and a crow for some reason is compelled to transport you elsewhere, probably the same way he transported the Pursuer around.
Yeah, but it makes me wonder, I mean, is it the same crow? It's no, got to be, surely.
I suppose it makes sense. How many crows can there be?
I've watched the footage for the crow that drops him off at the beginning of the fight and the same crow that takes you to the Lost Bastille, and they definitely look like the same crow, so maybe it's... if you actually do this animation and it drops you at the Bastille, it sort of drops you very unceremoniously, as though it's not very pleased with you. So it may be that it knows its purpose, but it's not happy that you killed its friend. But we're not going to go to the Lost Bastille at the moment. We'll save that for, I think, a couple of episodes' time. Right now, we're going to drop down a hole just next to the giant tree. Down this hole, we pick up Dranglake Sword and the Dranglake Set. These are interesting items. They're said to have been owned by Drummond, who is the Royal Army Captain. So this is the guy that's actually in charge of all of the soldiers that have been fighting in this war. And all the items are really positive about the guy. He actually sounds like a pretty great guy. The sword is described as an old and unadorned sword, but the pride and joy of this venerable captain and those before him used the sword to repel those who would threaten the great land. And the armor is said to have been owned by Drummond's ancestors and passed down through generation to generation, but Captain Drummond is the last of the proud line.
And obviously the fort was built to fight the giants, so it suggests that actually the fight with the giants was quite protracted.
It went over generations, quite some time it lasted, that war.
You also find the Dranglake shield, which is the first 100% defense shield in the game. You need 16 strength to wield it, though, so I can't use it.
Yeah, it's not a small number for a new character, but having a 100% blocking shield at this point in the game is definitely beneficial. So we've pretty much cleared the area for the Forest of the Fallen Giants. Now all we have left is to sort of head back to Majula and tie up the...
All the various loose ends. For instance, Malentia will now have travelled back to Majula, and she can be found by a wall from the bonfire just nearby. She has a go about everyone being really stingy everywhere. And she also says that Majula is the kind of place that everyone ends up, which kind of reinforces the idea that it's some kind of central hub, not just for you, but for all undead who have to make this journey ultimately, who come to the decrepit gate of Dranglake and fall into the maelstrom and end up in Majula.
You've also been able to buy that key from her at this point. So let's go ahead and open up Lenegrast's home. And we now have a working blacksmith.
Ah, yes. Very good. Now I can get to work. But first... let me set up.
Inside his home, you can also get your first crossbow. In the previous game, the crossbow and the normal bows function a little bit differently to each other, but this time around, they seem to both have a manual aim feature and exactly. A lock-on feature as
Whereas
well.
Whereas in the previous game, a crossbow didn't have a manual aim feature and was only fired by lock-on or haphazardly. How do I switch between my different equipped arrows and bolts?
This one tripped me up as well. So you can equip two different types of arrows and two different types of bolts in the item screen. And the way to fire the different ones is the difference between R1 and R2. So basically a strong attack will fire the second bolt that you have equipped, and a light attack will fire the first bolt that you have equipped.
I noticed after I came back and dealt with Morlin a little more, who's the really depressive guy who sells armor, he changed his disposition a little bit. He got happier, said he had more customers, which warmed my heart a little bit, but he also said sometimes his customers don't come back, which suggests that they die.
But that's through no small feat of your own. He only gets that disposition and more customers because you've actually invested some money in him. He'll only do that after you've spent 1,000 souls at his store. So it's as though you actually taking the chance to invest in this guy has allowed him to increase his ability to do business. And on top of which, he also gets some new items in his store, no few of which you can pick up the Elite Knight set, which is the archetypal armor from the previous game. And you can also pick up the Royal Soldier set, which we've been describing the Undead Soldiers set up to this point. The Royal Soldier set is the exact same armor, but it's before it's gone damaged and undead. It looks nicer, and it also does a bit more resistance damage, which really cool. You can pick up the busted stuff that these undead are wearing, or you can pick up the brand new shiny set from the shop, which is unused in a virgin state.
Now, if you circle around the pit very carefully, you can go back to the mansion that you probably tried the door of earlier and couldn't get into. You'll remember that after your discussion about maps with Kale, he gave you a key. Use the key to open the door and go inside. It's really interesting in there. Straight ahead is a room with a candle burning in it and an extremely large book, which I really want. Around the side of that, you'll find a Pharos Lockstone on a corpse.
This room is sort of a library and kind of reminded me a bit of the Duke's Archives, just with that enormous book. I'm not sure if there's any reference there. I can't really figure out what that enormous book would be for. It's just sort of sitting there open on the table as though somebody had been referencing it very recently.
Downstairs, you will find the map that was mentioned in passing by Kale. Kale believes that the map is a map of Dranglake, and he may well be right. Going further down from there, you'll discover an area with a skelly in it. Just one, I found. I had kind of thought from Kale's ominous discussions about the mansion, how he doesn't want to go too deep because he hears freaky noises or whatever.
Yeah, I thought it would be a bit more sprawling than it was.
And actually, I fought that first guy, and he was a bit tough, and I killed him, but I thought, no, I'm not coming back here because this is a bit beyond me. That was the only thing there.
Yeah.
He never actually respawns, even.
No, he doesn't. And to be honest, Kale won't go into the map room until you kill that skeleton. That's the trigger. So you have to have killed the last giant and killed this skeleton because he won't appear there otherwise.
Now, if you do go down past the skeleton, you'll discover a soul vessel. Now, this is an item that didn't exist in the previous game.
No.
And it's very, very cool. It allows you to respec. This is what the crones were talking about when they said you can come back here to get a new start. So if you go back with that item to Things Betwixt, you can use that item to reallocate your skill points.
Yeah, by talking to the firekeeper known as Strowen, to be exact. Since the last episode, I've actually gone and read some extra literature and learnt that the three firekeepers do have names. Strowen, the main one that talks, and the two more silent ones are known as Morel and Griant.
Yeah, so that item I think is really interesting. I haven't used mine yet, Bear in mind, you do pick up a couple of them, so I believe that they're single-use only items.
They are, and I also wonder what they are. They sort of look a bit larval, like
It almost looks like a geode to me. Like it's kind of a stone that's open in the middle with some blue glowy stuff coming out. It says it's a vessel, like you can pour your souls into it. It says it's a vessel that will accept your souls. Whether it means vessel figuratively, though, I don't know.
I wondered if it was like a living organism which you sort of are using to temporarily imbue with your souls while you reallocate them.
You'll find Kale in that room now after you fight that skelly, and he's looking at the map, and he talks about the fire. He actually seems a little bit more collected and sane.
Did you see the flame on the map? It wasn't there when I came here before. I don't know what explains it. But there is something greatly comforting about that flame. It seems to fulfill something very precious, deep within the soul. Something essential.
And I think his proximity to the fire has something to do with that. And he talks about the fire as being very comforting and fulfilling something deep within the soul, something essential.
Yeah, but he's not sure what they are yet. He just knows that he likes them.
That's kind of common within Dark Souls, isn't it? Fire is so very important. All the undead rely on the bonfires, and that's how you recharge your esters. Even that fellow that we'll discover later in the Lost Bastille mentions... The Lost Bastille talks about flame in a really personal, emotional way. You know, flame, dear flame. So obviously fire has a really deep importance to the characters and the lore of the Dark Souls universe. So I think it's unsurprising that Kale will be so taken with this little flame.
Well, let's not go too far into the Lost Bastille. We've gone enormously over time this episode, and that's pretty much wrapped us up. I think we should call it a day here and go into the sort of end portion of this episode. So as we do every week, we ask a listener question. And what's the question this week, Church?
Our question for the listeners this episode is about that statue we talked about, the bloodstained holy woman. What's your take on all of that? We'd love to hear what you have to say about the origin of that statue, whether it relates to Guinevere at all, and whether you have a different theory all of your own.
Yeah, I'll be sure to put up an image of her for our link dump. So that's our episode for this week. Next week, we'll be covering Hades Tower of Flame. We hope to see you all then.
The Dark Souls 2 has been a Screaming and Digital production. For show notes, please visit thedarksouls2.com or join the community at facebook.com/thedarksouls2. You can also contact us via info@thedarksouls2.com. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review on iTunes or spread the word. Our theme tune is The Knights of Darkness by Zero Project.